This is Ray Carlson. I'll let you introduce yourself.
Okay, I'm Ray Carlson, chemical engineer, Northwestern University. I worked 20 years in the petroleum industry and refining, all about catalysts and stuff. And I worked 20 years, I segued into film and television, if that isn't a switch, and did that for 20 years. And then I segued into teaching high school and college students how to write a business plan, how to start their own business. And the premise is that, for me, there's basically two streams in my life, and one is to communicate the gospel on as large a scale as possible, and that comes about through film and television, and the other is job creation as being the greatest need in the world today, simply because there are not enough jobs. And the population is exploding. Nigeria is going to double in the next 25 years, and they're already too large for the food source they have. And so we have it even in our own community. I'm in Pasadena Unified School District, and the composition of the student body is 60% Hispanic, 25% Black, and 3% White, probably Armenian. We have a lot of Armenians. And the problem is, for the Black community, as you well know, Black lives matter, and my premise is Black jobs matter. And that's something we can do about. The Black lives matter, other people have to do. But black jobs, that's something I'm convinced can be done, because I found it is really simple to teach how to write a business plan. And that probably came about because way back before I started my career, I was in junior achievement together with my then-girlfriend and subsequently wife. And there we learned how to write a business plan. But of course, that was pretty simple. Then when I got to Stockholm, Sweden eventually, I was a project design manager for Scandinavia's largest oil refinery. I mean, it's a billion-dollar deal in today's money. And I came in at the age of 33 to do a job that in the industry most people would have been 60 or something. But I had made a commitment to the Lord some years earlier that my wife and I both did, that we would go wherever He would send us. Well, in our view, He sent us to Stockholm, Sweden, because of the circumstances, the fact that I was young, but the project was much larger than I could have imagined, even from the standpoint that the refinery, they gave me as soon as I arrived there, they gave me a design parameters of how many gallons or barrels of finished products they were selling at the time, but their sales were growing, and so even though I started with a small refinery design, and then it kept getting bigger, and I think it was actually only 20,000 barrels a day when I arrived, and it grew to 10 times 200,000 barrels a day, which is really, really big. I don't know if there's any refinery in LA that's that big. But anyway, it was the pinnacle of a career for any chemical engineer. Now, the advantage I had, I went to Northwestern. Northwestern has been tied up with Universal Oil Products Company for many, many years because of some professors and the fact that some of them had invented the process for upgrading raw naphtha from crude oil to high-octane gasoline. I got the glasses on because my glasses are in my car. My brother went to get them, so you have to excuse it until he comes. I'm sorry. But anyway, I worked for UOP in a pilot plant where they were testing this particular catalyst. It was called platforming because it was made of platinum, noble metal, like gold and silver, and it was only 0.05 weight percent impregnated into little tiny eighth-inch pills of alumina. And then this stuff was loaded into reactors, and it was very high pressure, 500 psi, and high temperature, 950 degrees Fahrenheit. And then it had to have hydrogen circulating in order to keep the catalyst from coating over with carbon, which would kill it, essentially. But the nature of a catalyst is it can be used over and over again unless you poison it. Well, carbon doesn't poison it, but it just blocks it. Lead in gasoline poisons it. So back in the old days, if you were still putting leaded gasoline into one of the newer cars, you would have a problem because the catalytic converter in the back of your, under your car, would soon die. And so anyway, this process, the catalytic reforming process, was very strategic when it came out in the 50s, simply because it had twofold impact. One was catalytic converter mufflers, and the other one was converting useless naphtha into high-octane unleaded gasoline. And so I worked in the pilot plants, and I reported to the guy who invented the process, and then eventually the OP sent me out on the road. They have a large service organization, and I first went to see a full-scale refinery and see how it started up and shut down and all that. And then I pretty soon, a few years, I became a district representative. So I represented UOP in Ohio and Michigan and Ontario. And so I got a vast amount of experience because I was going in and out of refineries and starting them up, training the operators who would take over, and then running a test run on the efficiency of the catalyst, and then moving on. So my whole career was go in, test it, start it up, train the operators, move on. And in that process, I had to keep writing business plans for this major Swedish oil company that wanted to build a refinery. And so I had an awful lot of experience in actually operating a refinery by the time I was 33, which is a kid in that industry. And it kept going. And then at one point, I took a job in a local refinery in Michigan. And then I was offered, my wife and I made this commitment to go wherever the Lord wanted us to go. And we had become involved with a Christian film company, Gospel Films. And so that meant that I had to learn a lot about visual media. But in communicating the gospel, it was obvious to me, an engineer, that the visual media was the best way to do it, and the evidence proved that was so, because you got huge audiences of teenagers, high school kids, out to see Christian films way back in the 50s, mind you, and there was no other way. And I was also involved in starting a Youth for Christ program in Muskegon, Michigan. My wife and I had been to one in Lansing, our first experience, and when we moved to Muskegon, I saw Ted Engstrom. Dr. Ted Engstrom was speaking in a local church, and it said he was with Youth for Christ. And so we went and listened to him and talked to him afterwards and asked him, is there any Youth for Christ program in this town? And he says, no, but you ought to start it. Now, how's that for a command? And we did. And that was quite an experience because we would fill the high school assembly halls with kids on Saturday nights. So we were learning about, even though I was working in a refinery during the daytime, weekdays, and so we were impacting a lot of people, and it was obvious to me that this was a good way to reach people, was through youth rallies and film, especially film shown in youth rallies. Well, that then triggered the idea that why I should finish the oil career and move on to the other. And so I moved from Stockholm to London and there started a Christian film company in England. and one in Germany and one in Netherlands. And I was in England for 2 years, moved to Pasadena, and one thing I should mention is I got the idea that really working with the catalyst I was working with, which was platinum, the noble metal, number one, and at that time it was more expensive than gold, but now the Indian, South Asian Indians buy a lot of gold jewelry, and so the price of gold exceeds the price of platinum. But still, I thought the idea of that I was kind of a parable of a catalyst. I had this noble, I mean, the gospel to me was the noble platinum, and the fact that it would transform these other things and not be consumed, because by definition a catalyst doesn't get consumed. Reagents do, but not catalysts. And the fact that the platinum was impregnated into alumina pills, and that they were called the carrier. And I thought, well, that's what I am. I'm a carrier. And then the hydrogen gas, well, it's atomic weight 1. And sort of intrigued me that we could speak of that as the Holy Spirit, because it was necessary for the catalyst to function properly. And if the hydrogen stopped, if the compressor stopped, the catalyst got all carboned up black. I mean, it started out pure white, it ended up black. But it was possible to literally burn off that carbon from the catalyst. And in a way, I thought, well, that's kind of like it would be for a Christian to get the whatever sin was causing their problem in life, that it could be removed. But the thing is, the catalyst would never return to its original efficiency. Well, that sounded like that would be a human being too. So I got all these things in my mind, and so I literally thought of myself as a catalyst for the kingdom of God. And that's quite, and this conference, of course, is dedicated to scientists and engineers, I hope. But I started doing things and asking the Lord to give me wisdom, because I didn't know what I was doing, frankly, all too often. But like in one case, the film, I went to a Houston Shell Oil guy's home, and he was Christian, and he had a bunch of kids, and he had a bookcase full of kids. I said to him, "Well, of all these books you have, what would you like to see made into a movie?" He goes and pulls out 2 books, and he says, "Here." And that was Treasures of the Snow and Tanglewood Secret. So I went back to England and contacted the author, who was an ex-missionary, and she lived outside of London, and she wrote back and said, "Yes, by all means." And so the London company that I helped to form, they actually produced it with English writer, director, story, actors, cast, crew, all English, and English money. That was the most strategic. And it was remarkable. And of course, we didn't know how successful it was going to be. It was when Moody Press published it in the US as a book, and it was very successful for them. But I found out that, well, oh, so anyway, I got it over to the States, and we took it to a television convention in Las Vegas, and a guy comes to me, sees our booth, and sees our trailer, and he says, he's from Turner Program Services. Well, I knew Ted Turner was with CNN, but I didn't know anything. Well, this is brand new. Turner Program Services was trying to acquire products to sell to the whole television world. And he says, we can sell it to HBO, Showtime, and 8 other pay cable companies. Wow, HBO, they have 15 million subscribers? And we thought, they must have an average of a kid in every household. That's 15 million kids. HBO showed it 15 times during their 18-week window, and it was phenomenal that one could reach such a large audience with visual media. And so, and then also in that era of my life, we produced films in other languages, and then we had to get them into English too for the American market. And we had produced a children's film in Japan. And so it was all Japanese. And so then I discovered that Sony came out with their small, what was that, 8mm? It's the small size, not the big 3/4-inch deck.
Betamax?
Huh?
Betamax?
No.
Okay.
but anyway, they, what I just perceived is that, well, gosh, with stereo sound, you could listen to the original soundtrack, you could record your own voice on the other channel, and you could look at the screen and see how the lips are going. So I hired this young lady to do that, and we had a sort of a literal translation into English, but she had to make it in lip sync, and she did, line by line, and eventually the whole show. We looked at it, we hired the actors, the kids to come and do it. It worked out beautifully. What's significant about that is that a few years later, Campus Crusade heard about what we were doing, and they, of course, had the Jesus films just starting out in 79, and they gave us Polish to do, and we did such a good job that they gave us 20 more languages. And then 10 years later, I looked at the data that Crusade had on these particular versions, all 21 of them, and it was 300 million people had seen them. Now, if you're trying to communicate biblical truth, it's hard to beat what the Campus Crusade program did for with the Jesus film. And eventually, of course, along the way, we had a problem recording some abstract African languages, and I sent the team to New York City to do it because there's a little community there. And the guy calls me, my sound guy, and says, our 3/4-inch unit doesn't work. And I said, well, you're in New York City. You got to be able to fix it in New York City. If not there, how can we do this anyplace else in the world? So eventually got it done, and I told him, please design for me a portable unit. And he did. And about then, Campus Crusade learned about it, and so they hired him, including the machine. So, and that machine then evolved into the tiny little digital machine that Crusade uses all over the world. And Crusade even asked me if I was going to sue them. I said, no, I'm not going to sue Crusade. But anyway, I was, you know, eventually they have over 1,000 languages now, and a billion people they've reached. So it sort of vindicated what I felt about going into visual media. I could make build a refinery, I could design it, I could start it, I could do all of that stuff, but I didn't feel that was what the Lord called me to do, but it was an open door. So anyway, then after that experience, then I found out that I could produce films in so many different languages because of the expertise I had gained. But I moved on to other things, which then became job creation. And many people are interested in wells and vaccinations and all kinds of things, but I said the need is for jobs. Jobs, worldwide, all those migrants going up to Europe now, they all need jobs. And since I learned how to write business plans, I said, well, I'm gonna learn how to teach this. So I went to a local middle school in Pasadena and started to teach using junior achievement curriculum. But then I found that what they had put together was not as easy as it could be, and so I designed my own one-page fill-in-the-blank business plan. And I mean, that was terrific, because all of a sudden kids could do it. And the bottom line was really the bottom line. That was the money they would have if they completed a business plan. It was all based on their own ideas. And sometimes the kids couldn't come up with an idea. I had one a Latina girl. She's like 4'9", 11 years old. And I saw her looking through magazines. She couldn't come up with any idea for a business she could run. So I went over to her and I asked, what do you do after school? She thought for a while and she said, well, I walk dogs. Well, I knew a lady at church that walked dogs in Beverly Hills, and she had a six-figure income. So I thought, okay, that has prospects. And I said, what kind of dogs? Pit bulls. Pit bulls? She's only this high. I said, don't they drag you on the ground and bite you? No, but you have to speak Spanish in my neighborhood, she said. And that sounds reasonable. And she said, she also volunteered, and I can walk three pit bulls at the same time. I put one chain here, one chain here, one chain here. I said, three pit bulls? And I said, and you can do that without getting hurt? Oh, well, never got hurt. I said, do you get paid for that? No. Why do you do it? Oh, because I like dogs and I like the neighbors, and so I do it. I said, do you think you'd get paid for doing that? Yeah, I think so. How much? Oh, maybe 10 bucks. 10 bucks times three dogs, that's 30 bucks in an hour. Yeah. And how many days a week would you do that? And she said, 3 days a week, maybe? I said, $90 a week? $360 a month? All of a sudden, she got excited, ran to the computer, and started working away on the business plan. And she said, I want to see clip art of pit bulls. And she pushed a button, and there was a screen of 25 pit bulls. And she said, I want a blue nose pit bull. So she pulls it off onto her business card and her flyer and everything. So anyway, business plan is coming out the printer, I was standing there collecting all the pages, and just then her mom and dad walk in, little tiny Mexican people, and I showed him, her father, mother didn't speak English, I showed him, look, your daughter just made a business plan. Well, I don't know if he even knew what a business plan was, but he kept looking at that, looking at her, and he was amazed because I made such a big deal out of it. And so anyway, Jasmine had been telling me repeatedly, now don't ask me to pitch my idea to the whole class. I can't do that. I'm too shy. That's what she said. Finally, I had a promise. Okay, I won't do that. And lo and behold, the principal walks into the office and he chooses her. I don't, oh no. But she walks up to the table where her mom and dad were seated and holds on to the left and right side. She looks the principal in the eye and she pitches her idea to him. Well, when she finished, the principal applauded, the other teachers, the students, they had never seen this Jasmine before. So it gave me the feeling that, gosh, you can really encourage kids and give them a sort of a plan for life, which they didn't have, because most kids don't know what they want to do. And I found that over and over again, that when kids finally get it, I mean, kids. Now, you know that Bill Gates started when he was 13, and he almost flunked elementary school, according to the autobiography. But when he got to ninth grade, he found out they had a computer coding class in this private academy he went to, and of course, the rest you know. But it's sort of been like that a very young generation can learn. Now, I'm particularly interested in blacks because they have the most difficult time, and we know all about Black Lives Matter. So I've come up with a variation on Black Jobs Matter, because if blacks have jobs, if they can be encouraged to stay in school and learn, get a high school diploma. In fact, I always start out in a class with kids and I pull out a $1 million fake bill. They think it's real. And I said, okay, if you get your high school diploma, you'll probably earn another $25,000 a year over your 40-year career. And then I say, and pull out another $1 million bill, and I say, and if you get a bachelor's degree, you probably earn another $25,000 over your 40-year career. That's $2 million. And I pull out a whole sheaf of them, and I said, however, if you make your own job and you are your own boss, you can be like my younger brother. He earns one of these every year. Oh, it's usually, you know, it's so quiet in the room at that point. And they get all excited, they want to do it. And I, from that point on, I have maybe 8 or 10 other classes that I teach them all the basics of entrepreneurship. So anyway, now we do this, then I started doing it in Armenia, and they came and asked me to help. And I said, well, give me a map that shows 10 bite-sized chunks of Armenia, and I'll raise $10,000 a year for you, and we get to $100,000, we'll see where we're at. And when I say raise the money, through Rotary Clubs. So what happens, when they get up to six provinces of Armenia, USAID, Agency for International Development, looks at it and says, this is phenomenal. If we give you $2.5 billion, will you do the whole nation, every kid? Well, of course. Of course, they didn't need me anymore. But I was glad for the thing. So anyway, they had gone from 2,500 students a year when I got involved to 25,000. With USAID money, they went to 170,000. So that's kind of my gold standard for how to approach in another country, is to try to build it up and use the statistics that are out there. I also found out that in Sweden, the Swedish government was interested in this concept because of a junior achievement program there. And they found that, they did a professional survey and found that 24% of those who had studied this in high school were running their own business after 10 years. 24% in economic development terms is huge. So they had to run the survey over again, same results. But the other thing that was significant was they hired on average 4 employees. So you can say, okay, if one does it but hires 4 others, that's 5 for every 5 we train. Well, the statistics don't get any better than that. The Swedish government said, okay, we'll finance half the program and we'll ask the private sector, the Volvos and IKEAs and everybody, to do the rest. But they wanted to do the as same as in Armenia, the whole nation, and that's what they're doing now. So that's another gold standard I use. Okay, and once I saw that the state, the World Bank was interested in doing something like this in Africa, in Uganda, so I sent him a letter. The guy's name was Carlson. My name is Carlson. I thought, oh, I'll get a quick response. Wrong. Took 3 months before he answered me. But he apologized profusely, just had a son, blah, blah. And he said, we're very interested in your proposal for so many countries that we're operating in. And he said, would Rotary be interested in working together with the World Bank? I said, yes. And he said, okay, I'll have a guy call you in the morning and work it through and we'll get started. So next morning, guy calls me, talks for an hour, and then he says, can Rotary put money into this? And I'm thinking, this is the World Bank. Why is he asking my little Rotary Club for money? But I said, yes, if you'll match whatever I raise. Oh, sure. Well, that was easy for them. But anyway, that got us started in Uganda, where we trained 500 students. Well, there were a mixture of students and all in the age of 20s. And then after that, we got a contract from the U.S. Department of State. And they gave us $130,000 to train 208 Zambian college students, and to bring 8 of them, to send 8 American experts to Zambia to teach, and to bring back 8 Zambian, the students with the best business plans. So we had them in D.C. and L.A. for a total of 2 weeks, and so the concept kept growing and growing. And it was fulfilling what I beyond my imagination. And in fact, my feeling was that, and is, that once you make a commitment to serve the Lord, He opens all kinds of doors that are a surprise. So many of them, I had no idea on so many of these things, but these doors kept opening, and they still do. And that's why I feel that scientists and engineers should really think about what they could do with an extra hour a week teaching kids how to write business plans. Because it's easy. Rotary is a good vehicle because most of them are business savvy, and there's 1.25 million of them, and they meet in 33,000 Rotary clubs all over the world. They're everywhere. So I'm working through that, and I've got more and more people. I find that ladies do a better job than men. I don't know why, but that's the fact. And we have a Nigerian-American lady in Rancho Cucamonga here who is our point person for Nigeria. And when she went over there, and the first time, after only 9 months, she said, "Okay, I'm ready to go. Can you get me the tickets and money for printing the manuals?" I said, "Oh, isn't this awfully soon? I'm used to working with guys, and it takes 2 years for it to get to that point." And so she said, "I'm ready." And so then she goes over there, and the results that she comes back with are so phenomenal. I said, "What did you do before you migrated to America?" She says, "I was chief legislative officer for the parliament of Kaduna State." Wow, like attorney general. But she, because she had this experience and wisdom, she could get around anybody that tried for bribes or whatever. And so now I've got her in charge of not only Nigeria, but Africa, because she's so adept at it. Anyway, that's pretty much what I do. And I really would encourage you, whether you teach your own children, your grandchildren. There's so many people that can learn. We started this year teaching Boy Scouts. Boy Scouts have a merit badge for entrepreneurship. And I looked at the little manual they have, and it's so easy. So I finally convinced the Greater LA Council, "Can't we teach some of your kids?" Because I found out they had taught only 5 the year before. And I said, "Why?" And he said, "Because we can't find any counselors." And I was in a Rotary room, and I said, "Look at all these guys. Every one of them is a potential counselor." So anyway, they got courage up and blasted 17,000 scout families and filled up the room where we at the Boy Scout headquarters. And I got the counselors all in to train them. And then one of the local Rotary clubs in Pasadena, the oldest one, over 100 years old, with over 100 scouts, and they wanted me to teach them. So I did taught 14 kids. And that was a revelation to me, how sharp these kids were. And of course, the ethics of the Boy Scouts are phenomenal to begin with. And their discipline, I mean, they came every Monday night, and it was just a phenomenal experience. So there's Boy Scouts. Now, of course, people, "What about the girls?" Well, we're working on that too, and I've got a couple of young ladies who are willing to get the Girl Scout program going, because do you realize there are 2.5 million Boy Scouts in America and 2.5 million Girl Scouts in America? That's a lot of people. And it's so easy to teach them. So it's another thing, if you have kids or scouts, Cub Scouts, whatever, another block of people that you could train. And the big need out there is just simply because there's so many jobs that are needed, and so many kids are not graduating into any kind of a career. I mean, I was aghast when UCLA 2 years ago admitted only 90 black students. UCLA, 90 black students. They got embarrassed and upped it, I think, maybe to 200, but still, that's not much for such an institution. And so that's why I'm going to start pushing this Black Jobs Matter concept, because I think that will lead to more respect for the blacks and give them a better opportunity to find a career for their lives and get them less involved in any kind of violence that would otherwise be the case. Any questions? Yes, sir.
Did you invest your personal fortune in these pursuits, or you raised money from other sponsors?
Actually, I only do it through the Rotary Club.
So you're not putting your own money into this?
Well, I put some money into it,
but the
more important thing is time. And that's the problem. People don't want to give up their time. I say an hour a week is too much. Yeah. And so it's never been the money. It's always been the time that people weren't willing to do it. But all I can say is when you listen to the kids after they've been through a class, and it's so fulfilling, it's unbelievable. And the teacher at the last class I taught, they were what's in alternate education. This means that they flunked out of high school. This is their last chance to get a high school diploma. And so after I had finished teaching the kids, and they had written their business plans, and I gave them certificates of excellence for that, and they left, and the teacher turns to me and says, "You have no idea how much you meant to those kids." I said, "What do you mean?" He says, "They don't have anybody at home that loves them. And the fact that you gave all this personal attention to each one of them, personally," and I could tell, I'd never been in a classroom before where kids, when they might walk into the room, they say, "Hello, Mr. Carlson," sort of nod their head and take my hand. And when they leave, they say, "Thank you, Mr. Carlson." I said, "Wow." And then the teacher said to me, "You know, you really ought to teach, you ought to train a lot of teachers to do this." She said, "I didn't know anything about it. Now I do." And she said, "You will impact more kids if you do that." Then all of a sudden it flashed in my mind. Gosh, way back in 05, I trained 155 teachers of the LA County Office of Education. And then I asked the San Marino High School, you know, huge, 951 academic performance index, almost the tops in the state. And so I asked the teacher, how was he teaching 120 students every year to write business plans? "How did you learn that?" "Just from you." I was so embarrassed because I couldn't remember 155 teachers, but then this teacher from Arcadia said exactly the same thing. He said, "Look in your brochure, see that picture? That's us." And these two teachers together are probably teaching 300 students every year. And then get this, San Marino High School offers it in summer school for 5 weeks, $500 tuition. Now, for San Marino, that's maybe lunch money, but still, just the fact that the parents were interested enough in the concept of learning how to start their own business, that told me a lot. So, yeah, it's fun. I love it. I hope that you will think of others to do it in churches. I'm trying to get black churches to do it in their youth groups. I went to Fellowship Baptist Church this morning, and I didn't talk to the pastor this time, but the last time I did, he was interested. So, an hour a week. That's it. Okay? Thank you. This is my fancy.
Yes.
Entrepreneurs create jobs. Jobs create hope. Hope creates peace. Teach entrepreneurship.